we're trying to end. The International Court of Justice has concluded last year that Israel's occupation is illegal and must come to an end. The UN General Assembly passed a resolution overwhelmingly in support of a resolution that called on Israel to end its illegal occupation immediately, gave Israel a deadline of September 2025, which it has breached, to end its occupation and remove its settlers from occupied territory. So the central problem that we have is that Israel continues to operate its illegal occupation by apartheid rule. Now, since the past 2 years, we've added to that the genocidal slaughter in Gaza. So these are the central problems. These are the central crimes that must end and must end conditionally. The problem with past failed approaches like the Oslo process is that they conditioned ending Israeli crimes of occupation, of apartheid, on some negotiated peace solution, on some agreement over governance, and put the onus on Palestinians to have better governance, new governance, different governance, conditions that, of course, Palestinians would inevitably never meet because of the structure of the Palestinian Authority as effectively an agent of the occupation and administrator of the occupation in certain parts of the West Bank. And that is the approach that our book rejects. We say that first, occupation and apartheid has to end. And second, that only the people living between the river and the sea should democratically decide what their future governance looks like, whether one state or two states. The essential problem is one that the United States refuses to deal with and refuses to address. The United States matters because it is the principal backer of Israel. And without U.S. military and diplomatic and political support, Israel's occupation and apartheid rule would have ended decades ago. What we're hoping for is to offer an off-ramp for peace, an off-ramp for security for all of the people, Israeli Jews, Palestinians, other minorities living between the river and the sea. Israeli Jews want an off-ramp that will see an end to their global isolation, increasing sanctions against them, inability to live in peace and security, permanent war footing, endless wars. I can't imagine that this is something that Israeli Jews want for their future. But really, the only two options that remain now is either the full displacement and eradication of Palestinians, which is what the current Israeli government has been seeking to do, as we've seen in Gaza, as we are seeing in the West Bank, or an alternative detailed approach for how to bring democratic rule between the river and the sea and allow people to do what we do in democratic countries around the world, which is choose our government.
Sarah Lee Whitson, I want to thank you for being with us, Executive Director of DAWN, an organization working to reform U.S. foreign policy in the Middle East. She's written a new book, is co-authored with Michael Schaefer Omerman. It's called From Apartheid to Democracy, A Blueprint for Peace in the Israel-Palestine. Coming up, Dean Fulahan, who's been picked by New York Mayor Alex Zoran Mamdani to serve as his deputy mayor and help carry out his affordability agenda. Then we'll speak with Bishop Barber. Stay with us.
In the beginning, you really loved me, but I was too blind, and I couldn't see.
Zeeshan B covering You Don't Miss Your Water in our Democracy Now! Studio. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Here in New York, Mayor Alex Zoran Mamdani will be taking office in just 5 weeks on January 1st. His transition team continues to make announcements about the new administration. On Tuesday, his office confirmed 179 political appointees from Eric Adams' administration have been asked to resign by January 1st. On Monday, Mamdani unveiled a 400-person advisory group broken up into 17 committees. The transition team says they've received over 70,000 applications from New Yorkers interested in working for the new administration. One of the most significant and earliest announcements was the appointment of the first deputy mayor, Dean Fulahan. This is Mayor-elect Mamdani.
I want to announce my first deputy mayor, Dean Fulahan. Except that I know for many, he will require no introduction. I'm grateful to him for returning to public service, and I know he has chosen to do so because he believes in our administration's ability to deliver universal child care, making the slowest buses in America fast and free, and freezing the rent for more than 2 million rent-stabilized tenants in this city.
Dean Fulahan served as first deputy mayor during the Mayor de Blasio's second term. During de Blasio's first term, he was director of the Mayor's Office of Management and Budget. Most recently, New York Governor Kathy Hochul appointed Fulahan to the New York State Financial Control Board. He also served as a top aide to legislators for decades. The nation's John Nichols calls him one of the most experienced hands in New York City and state government. Incoming First Deputy Mayor Dean Fulahan also spoke at Mamdani's news conference.
I am proud to be returning to City Hall as your First Deputy Mayor. New Yorkers elected you because they know you will build an administration of energy, ideas, and experience. I look forward to being part of a city government that looks like New York City and understands what it means to be a New Yorker. Like so many in our city, and the mayor-elect mentioned it, I come from an immigrant family. My father, an immigrant from Lebanon, my mother, whose parents immigrated from Lebanon, and her first language, Arabic. They struggled and succeeded and instilled in my brothers and me a deep sense of public service and a commitment to providing others that same opportunity. The same is true of my wife's parents, who both immigrated from Korea. The mayor-elect has provided that same hope in every message throughout the campaign. I am one of the many that was deeply inspired by that message of hope. I firmly believe in this agenda, and I am proud to join a team that will be devoted to this agenda and will work every day to make it happen.
To speak more about Mamdani's affordability agenda and how it will be accomplished, Dean Fulahan joins us now in our New York studio. So to say the least, it is will be a major change. And then you have President Trump meeting with Mayor-elect Mamdani in the Oval Office in the White House. If you can talk about how you plan to achieve these extremely important changes that Mamdani has laid out, and what you did under de Blasio, the pre-K school system that is larger than most school systems in the United States, kindergarten through through 12th grade, and many thought that couldn't be accomplished.
Well, first, good morning, and thank you for having me here. I'm a huge fan and a constant listener, so but you're right. It's a challenge. It's an opportunity. And what the mayor-elect is doing, and what we're all doing, the team that brought him through a remarkable campaign from basically being completely unknown a year ago, after the presidential election, to going out in the streets and asking people why they had voted around New York City for Donald Trump, and understanding that frustration and those challenges, and turning that into a campaign of opportunity and hope, which is what he won on in overwhelming numbers on Election Day. And now with that same drive, that same drive, building a much bigger team that's going to say, okay, here are the priorities that the mayor-elect put forward. The affordability agenda, every single one of them, how do we achieve those? How do we negotiate with Albany to achieve those? How do we meet in Washington with the president to achieve those? At the same time, this is, you know,
8.5 million people. It's an amazing city. It's a privilege to be part of that, but it has day-to-day obligations as well. So we're putting together an aggressive team that can deliver the services New Yorkers need. So every single day, there are obligations in New York City, day-to-day ones, whether it's picking up trash, making sure the children are safe in schools, making sure they're learning in our schools. All those day-to-day things we have to do, and the mayor-elect is committed to do them in a better way, to actually make New Yorkers see the improvements in the day-to-day city services. So we're doing that, while we also have this very aggressive agenda, and while we also handle the unforeseen and the crisis that may happen on a daily basis as well in New York City. That's the team we're putting together. That's why we're involving so many New Yorkers in a dialogue about what is that agenda and how they can help us. And that's how we're doing it. So every day, that is the agenda.
And Dean, I wanted to ask you, during the when Bill de Blasio was first elected, of course, he had little experience and he depended on a known and respected veteran of government during his first term, Tony Shores. And you obviously worked under Tony. Wondering your sense, the discussions you had with Mamdani about taking this post, because obviously, you know, well, all the leaders in Albany, the power elite of the city will probably have much more respect for you because they have so much trepidation about the Mamdani victory. What were the discussions that you had with Mamdani about your role as the key figure on the day-to-day operations of city government?
So first, Juan, it's wonderful seeing you again. So we actually both spent a lot of time in New York City and in Albany. So it's really a pleasure to be with you again.
And we should say that Juan wrote a book on the de Blasio administration.
So Juan, right from the very beginning, and I met with the mayor-elect in the winter. We talked about how to make, and at that point, he was still very low in the polls. We talked about how to make New York City work, how a government functions, and how you get to, instead of working to make sure an agenda, an aggressive agenda, is accomplished and can be accomplished. I believe then that every one of his agenda items could be accomplished, should be accomplished, needed to be accomplished. And we talked about how we would effectuate that, and we kept doing that. And you raised the de Blasio administration, and obviously one of the first major successes of the whole administration was universal pre-K. And when that started, we heard the exact same things that you just cited. We heard from the then governor of New York that you should start with a pilot, he wouldn't fund it, that there was no way for it to happen. We heard from our own department, well-meaning, that it would take 5 years. Well, 3 months later, we had the funding, and 2 years later, it was fully implemented. Government can, working together across agencies with clear direction, can accomplish the needs of New Yorkers. And that's what the mayor-elect has put forward. That's what he ran on. That's the team he's putting together. That's why I'm privileged to be part of this team. And it's incumbent on us to make sure that happens. There are ways to do that. Is it easy? Of course not. But that's what we're going to accomplish.
Now, one of the signature promises of Mamdani is maintaining a rent freeze on rent-stabilized apartments. But as you well know, there's a 9-member rent guidelines board that is appointed by the mayor, and the outgoing mayor, Eric Adams, could conceivably, in his last months in office, appoint enough people to saddle Mamdani with a rent guidelines board. Have you had any discussions with the outgoing Adams administration about that?
You know, Juan, what we're working on is, I'm going to say it again, every single one of the agenda items, whether it's universal childcare, whether it's free and fast buses, whether it's the rent freeze, we're going to find a way to accomplish. We believe we can do that. We've put a huge team together to make sure that happens, and we're going to get there. The exact route of every single one of these, we're working right now on universal child care, which also everyone was saying could not happen, much too expensive, will not happen. Well, we have a governor who for weeks now has said universal child care is also part of her agenda. So those claims of, well, it's impossible are no longer happening now. We expect to see that in every single one of these items.
And what about the governor's support for things like free buses? Is there a potential for that as well?
I apologize for repeating the same message, but it is what he ran on. It is what he had overwhelming support for, and those are accomplishments we're going to make happen. We're going to outline those. We're going to say what our process is to get them. We believe that we have a very different relationship with the current governor in New York than the very contentious one that you reported on for so many years and actually covered many different mayors and governors. We believe this will be a very different relationship, and that's already started, and we're in constant conversations with the governor and the governor's team.
Speaking about changing relationships, Mayor-elect Mamdani was just in Washington, D.C. with President Trump, who had threatened to deport him, to detain him, called him a communist lunatic. But this was a bit of their exchange.
I just want to congratulate. I think you're going to have, hopefully, a really great mayor. The better he does, the happier I am, I will say. There's no difference in party. There's no difference in anything. And we're going to be helping him to make everybody's dream come true, having a strong and very safe New York. And congratulations, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
Please.
I appreciated the meeting with the president. And as he said, it was a productive meeting focused on a place of shared admiration and love, which is New York City, and the need to deliver affordability to New Yorkers, the 8.5 million people who call our city their home, who are struggling to afford life in the most expensive city in the United States of America. We spoke about rent, we spoke about groceries, we spoke about utilities, we spoke about the different ways in which people are being pushed out, and I appreciated the time with the president, I appreciated the conversation, I look forward to working together to deliver that affordability for New Yorkers.
So before this, President Trump had threatened ICE raids of New York, more intense ICE raids. Were you shocked by President Trump's first antagonism and also saying he's withholding billions of dollars from the city if Mamdani wins, to his incredible embrace? And what does it mean? How will you deal with this extremely, to say the least, mercurial president?
Look, I mean, the mayor-elect asked for the meeting, requested the meeting, knew what the agenda was to present and to discuss with the president about New York City, something they, and clearly there, what happened was there's a common interest that came out of that meeting. And, you know, we'll take that. We'll accept that there are potential places we can work together while we disagree. The mayor-elect didn't back down from his positions. He was very firm in what he believes in. He said that at the press conference. He's repeatedly said that.
Says he thinks he's a fascist and a despot.
But to the extent that we can work And for the benefit of New Yorkers, we're going to accept that. We're going to make that part of how we achieve the affordability agenda. We're not backing away from it, and we look for help wherever we can get it, while also maintaining our principles and defending New Yorkers. None of that has been backed up.
Did he get a promise from President Trump not to do the kind of ICE raids, for example, and we're going to talk about this in a minute with Bishop Barber, that he's done in Charlotte, hundreds of people arrested?
Well, the mayor-elect has clearly raised that at the press conference, raised it after, that is still a grave concern for us. And I'm going to repeat, we're going to protect New Yorkers. We're going to enforce the laws of New Yorkers, and we're going to continue to be be moving on both agendas, the affordability as well as providing safety for New Yorkers.
And Dean, finally, I wanted to ask you about your sense of relations with the police department. Clearly, during the de Blasio administration, the police were a major, major stumbling block in terms of the mayor's relations. What's your sense of what you would like to see? I know that Mamdani has said he's going to keep the current police commissioner, but what your sense is in terms of what you're going to do to build relationships with the police department?
We've already started that, right? I mean, the mayor-elect has appointed the current police commissioner, Jessica Tisch, to continue. I'm having numerous conversations with her. The mayor-elect is about what the agenda is, and the same thing is going to happen. We're going to work, beginning in January, we're going to be working with the police commissioner and the NYPD on how to address the concerns of safety, but also how to develop the Department of Community Safety, treat mental health issues differently. All that is going to be worked out, and we'll do that with the NYPD, and we believe it will be done in a cooperative way. We're very hopeful about what this administration can achieve, but we also know that the agenda is that we will achieve it, and the NYPD will be part of achieving that, but so will a different approach to public safety, a different approach to mental health, a different approach to crisis intervention. All those things can work together and actually have a police department that deals with what their core issues are and not taking on additional social issues that we have to confront and deal with.
Dean Fullahan, I want to thank you very much for being with us. New York City's incoming first deputy mayor in the Zoran Mamdani administration. Zoran Mamdani will be sworn in as New York mayor on January 1st. Coming up, protests continue in North Carolina after federal agents arrest at least 370 people in immigration raids. We'll speak to Bishop William Barber in 20 seconds. They denied, sung by repairers of the breach procession, standing against deadly policy violence led by Reverend Bishop William Barber. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Mimi Goodman for Juan Gonzalez. In North Carolina, protests are continuing as they're continuing around the country. In North Carolina, federal agents arrested 370 people in immigration raids. On Monday, Bishop Barber and other religious leaders gathered in Charlotte.
So they hit North Carolina with ICE raids. Yeah. And they hit North Carolina with ICE raids right at the same time people are raising concerns about Medicaid and health care and racist voter redistricting. Yeah. And some people think then that means what we have to do is go to the ICE raids and forget about the other thing. But what we know in this movement is it all connects.
Was Bishop William Barber speaking Monday in Charlotte, North Carolina. Joining us now from North Carolina, he's president of Repairers of the Breach, national co-chair of Poor People's Campaign, founding director of the Center for Public Theology and Public Policy at Yale Divinity School. We only have a few minutes, Bishop, but your agenda is a big one. Can you talk about the protests around immigration raids and then what you're talking about when it comes to health care and other issues right now?
No, thank you so much, Amy. We had Moral Monday in 20 states yesterday. And in North Carolina, we had two, one at 12 o'clock, one at 7 o'clock. And the focus is to connect the dots and to bring people out of every different race, creed, and color. We were in Charlotte because the ICE raids came. We knew they were coming. People stood up, had been planning for months and waiting for it. We went there to deliver Liberty Vans, which is a concept through the Save America movement. Steve Schmidt and others have come together. These vans on public ground travel constantly to film what ICE is doing that news may not get a hold of, and to put it out there, and also to document the trauma that people are going through. But we also gathered hundreds of people right there in that church and thousands online who are saying that when you look at the ICE raids and then the raiding of Medicaid for millions of people, the raiding of food stamps for millions of people, and in North Carolina, the raiding of our voting rights, what you have is a conglomerate of policy violence. And it's deadly. It's deadly. It kills dreams, it kills hopes, it kills democracy. But also we know 51,000 people are scheduled to may die from preventable death because of what has happened in the big, beautiful, big, ugly, destructive bill. And the reason, Amy, we keep raising that is because that same bill that cut 16 million people's health care, 22 million people's food stamp, takes that cut and then puts $150 billion into ICE agents. They're hiring more agents with masks. And we recognize that we have to connect this together, and we have to stand strong together, and it has to be a moral issue. We cannot let this merely be an issue between Democrats and Republicans. We had clergy from everywhere, as well as activists, as well as impacted people on Monday night who are determined for the long haul and who understand what policy murder, policy violence, policy disruption looks like, and why in this moment we must raise it like never before. And we're talking about long term. These Moral Mondays will continue. They began in the South in 10 states. Now they've spread to 20. And we're going to continue to raise it. In fact, Amy, lastly, when we go, we're not only going with vans, we're going with caskets. We're literally taking caskets to the General Assembly, sometimes to the office of these congresspersons and senators, to say these policies are destructive to lives. And we must make that case before America. This is not just about Democrat and Republican and left versus right. This is literally about life versus death.
And Reverend Barber, in Chicago, everyone from the governor on down to all the community organizations finally succeeded in basically pushing ICE out of the city, at least temporarily. What's your sense of the kind of solidarities that are being built between Black and brown communities in North Carolina right now?
Well, Black and brown and white, you know, people are coming together. And I think it's important to say that. And Asian, we had Jewish, we had Muslim in the room, we had Christian in the room. You know, sometimes what happens is pain that is caused by powerful politicians who forget that what they ought to be doing is picking up humanity rather than pulling down humanity. It actually has a reversal effect, and it makes people come together because it's so blatant, so ugly, so harsh, and so mean. And that's what we see happening. And people are not believing that ICE has ever gone anywhere. They are saying they may go underground, they may stop for a minute, but just like what you see in Charlotte, the people that were planning there, even before we went down on Monday, they'd been planning, they'd been training, they'd been getting ready. And that's what we're saying to cities and states and states all over the country. Get ready. Don't wait. Get ready now. And get ready by connecting the dots. Get ready by connecting the dots. We must organize this pain, the same pain that is caused by millions of people losing health care, millions of people losing their food stamp, millions of people's voting rights being challenged, millions of people without living wages, and millions of immigrants being challenged and harmed and deported. We must connect all of that pain into a powerful movement. And then lastly, Amy, this is not new.
We have 10 seconds.
Yeah. Well, the bottom line is we also said this is not new. This has a deep American history. People have had to fight it for years, and it's our time now that we have to fight it, and we must do it together.
And as we move into this holiday weekend, people should remember, according to Feeding America, 1 in 5 children are going hungry in the United States. That's despite the government reopening. Bishop William Barber, president of Repairers of the Breach, National Co-Chair of the Poor People's Campaign. Thanks so much for being with us. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for another edition of Democracy Now!
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, British Columbia.
Get ready for Listen Up. The Geography Student Union presents a night of live music starting at 5 p.m. on November 29th at the Student Union Building Ballroom on SFU Burnaby campus, featuring Sleepy Gonzalez, The Lunchtime Band, and Tiger Really. Tickets are $15, available online or at the door while they last. Open to all ages and everyone.